Thank you very much. I feel honored. I was just meeting a friend out in the hall, and I was identified as the poor man's Judy Lebedoff. I must say that being a stand-in for Judy makes me feel I'm striking one small blow for male liberation. I do know the Lebedoff family, and as a matter of fact, David Lebedoff represented United Press International when Governor Anderson went to China, both in writing and in photos. And I must confess, if he ever gets tired of being a lawyer, he's got a job with us. Of course, he won't eat very well. I can't possibly understand how I'm here today. I've been out of my own country and out of my own home state for almost a quarter of a century. And I'm sort of reminded of the story. I hope there are a few here who are old enough to remember the book and the movie Lost Weekend. And one of the comedians said, I can't seem to understand why they make all that fuss about Lost Weekend. I misplaced 1952 entirely. Well, I feel like maybe I've misplaced the last 25 years of my life. Although I must confess it was a great adventure, I enjoyed it. I also must confess that I'm all awfully happy to be home and in my own home state and in the lovely city of Minneapolis and its twin, St. Paul. I don't feel that I can make many predictions about my own business, of what it's going to be in the year 2000. I can only make a few observations. I do not think that we're ever going to be without a newspaper. There are going to be a great many electronic inventions and innovations by the year 2000. We've already had all kinds of experiments, they're still going on, about delivering a newspaper by electronic means. It's possible. I saw some of the early experiments back in New York in the early 40s. But they're just nothing quite like your newspaper. For the women, to get a newspaper without those great display ads, high, expensive dresses. The men want to find out how much their suits cost, which usually are more expensive than the dresses. It's just inconceivable. However, I do think, and already we're making some great experiments along this line, you are going to find educational opportunities. Sorry, doctor, I don't mean to step on your cognitive grounds. I just learned that word. You are going to find some great educational opportunities, perhaps in the year 2000. I'm using educational opportunities in the widest of all possible sense. Perhaps informational. We're already making a great many experiments in the use of radio and televised, computerized programs. Let me give you a little example. If you ladies this afternoon were so ill-advised as to come out and to listen to us, and when you got home, you had missed your favorite program, you will have a computer by your TV or near your TV, and by a few little code numbers, 321, You'll punch it, and then within seconds, whatever you want to see comes on. If your husband is dragooned out to a party in the evening when he wanted to watch the World Series, he will be able to come home, punch a few coded things, and see, alas, Boston losing. Or the Red Sox winning. I mean, the Red Legs winning, excuse me. We've even gone so far in the experiments that my company is engaged in providing pattern and fashion service by coded computer. We've got recipe services. These are all on an experimental basis, but they're actually going on now. And I have every idea that by the year 2000 they will no doubt be in some form of reality. Somebody's got to pay for it. That I can't forecast who will. There is a very interesting experiment going on, or soon to go on here, right in your own Twin Cities. This, if there's anybody here for the media, I would rather it not be published because it's so somewhat of a confidential nature. But the Minneapolis Star Tribune is very likely to be a pilot experiment, which will be participated in by some of the largest newspaper groups in the country, in a new form of computerized editing. This is highly technical in nature. I only mention this as the fact that you do have a very, very progressive media operation here in your Twin Cities and in Minnesota. Certainly I remember as a boy growing up in Austin, the great columnists, Cedric Adams, George Barton, and lo and behold, Dick Cullum, who's still writing. He must be just about 7 years older than I am by now. Aside from that short preface on the media business, I don't think I can tell you a great deal more. I'm just not that au courant in it. I can say, it's just a one little added paragraph, that some of the most sophisticated production equipment in the media meaning every form of it, is now coming from where I lived for so many years, Japan. For many years, people felt that the Japanese were nothing but copiers. There's the famous old story about back between the First and Second World War, in which the brass of the Japanese Navy went to Britain to study a battleship, and they came back and they built one exactly like it, and the British came out to look at it, a brand new one. And on one of the boilers, they had a metal patch. And the British Admiral says, "Why do you have that?" They says, "Well, you had it on yours, so we got it on ours." That's no longer true. They made tremendous strides in their technological fields of camera, electronics, electronic editing, and in related fields. I think that maybe, with that out of the way, I better talk about something I know a little bit more about, or think I know a little bit more about, and that is the impact that my part of the world, meaning Asia, is going to have on this country by the year 2000. Sadly, we note that Arnold Toynbee died yesterday. the great philosopher historian, said that one of his goals was to teach his people, meaning the Western world, that they were in the minority. This is something we have to remember, something we have to realize, that one out of every four people on this earth lives in China and it's the areas that surround it. As alluded to before, they're no longer the backward people that they used to be. Unfortunately, I'm afraid, we have too much of an attitude that they are. We've gone through a crushing, humiliating experience. I certainly don't want to be political about this. I covered the war in Vietnam. There are many times, right or wrong, it's up for you to decide. However, I don't think there'd be anybody that would argue that we were humiliated. We lost, really, our first war. This is a sign to us, I think, that we have got to take different attitudes toward Asia. After admitting our humiliation, our debacle, our disaster, I think possibly looking forward to the year 2000, that it's not going to be as unmitigated a disaster as many of us might think it will. I think Asia now, and perhaps other countries in the world, have gotten the idea that they're going to have to take a great deal more responsibility for their own future, their own destiny. Previously, oh, don't worry about it. Uncle Sugar will come and unload a lot of money and a lot of guns and everything else on us. But now I think they've been disillusioned. And I think it's a healthy disillusionment. I hope that we do learn that we can't support the whole rest of the world. And I hope they understand this. I think by the year 2000, if not before, already it's underway, you're going to see that the only really industrial country in Asia, Japan, is going to take a great deal more responsibility for its own defense. It's been hiding under the United States, America's nuclear umbrella for all these years. But now I wonder if they realize that may be a little bit chancy. They've been spending less than 1% of their gross national product for defense, while we spend 10-15%. Even then, they spend less for education than they do for defense. Not very healthy. But the Philippines, the Republic of Korea, and all the countries in Asia, I think, are going to have been jolted into a new sense of responsibility that will show up. In much more dramatic terms and patterns by the year 2000. But nonetheless, the pivotal country in Asia, without doubt, is the People's Republic of China. And this is where I think you will find the greatest changes by the year 2000. We don't know what's going to happen when the present leadership goes on, and that shouldn't be too long. Zhou Enlai is obviously very ill. Mao Zedong, the great father image, is certainly well over 82, 83, and certainly not in all the best of health. I don't think there'd be too much change. But where the change is going to come is that China, the Republic, the People's Republic of China, is coming out of its shell that it had for 25 years almost, 22 years after the takeover in 1949. It's coming out so much faster than most people realize. Our trade with China goes up about tenfold every year. It can't continue at that, but it will do very well. China is now one of the biggest oil producers in the world, and it's just scratched the surface. Underneath that deep trench that runs from the Bering Sea all the way down to the tip of Indonesia, for instance, the United Nations has surveyed it and have predicted that the world's largest reserves of oil are in that trench. It makes sense. It once was an area connected to the mainland of the Asian continent and then fell below water and is now a tremendously rich deposit of fossilized energy. China is going to have to be reckoned with one of these days by the United States, and my prediction on it is that it undoubtedly we will probably recognize Red China, rightly or wrongly, but we will probably do it after the 76 elections. I don't see how we can avoid it much longer. Very interesting development in China, I think, via our own country, and that is that up until about 2 or 3 years ago, every Chinese broadcast practically from Peking by Xinhua, the Chinese news agency, called us the running dogs of imperialism. Those were some of the nicer phrases they used. And countries like Japan, the Philippines, and South Korea, Republic of Korea, were called the lackeys and the running dogs of American imperialism. Now, this has almost ceased, with the exception of Korea, or with their reference to Indochina. They still cannot see American forces in any land area abutting China, which I suspect if you look at it from their standpoint, we wouldn't like either if we had Chinese communist forces in Mexico or Canada. We certainly didn't like Russian weapons in Cuba. But where it comes to our bases in Japan, even in Taiwan, certainly in the Philippines, they have completely stopped these virulent, vitriolic broadcasts because they do not represent a land threat to the Republic of China. Some American visitors, high American visitors who have been to China, say that before he became ill, that Zhou Enlai, Premier Zhou Enlai, actually told them that they welcomed the American presence in Okinawa, Japan, and in the Philippines. They are deathly frightened of Russia. There is no doubt this is not a propaganda ploy. They feel that we can be the buffer between Russia and the People's Republic of China. They do feel we're getting too cozy, as you probably read the morning papers about the argument over detente with Kissinger and the Chinese leadership. I don't think they're so much worried about detente per se as they feel that detente is going to give Russia time to build up its forces along the border with China rather than keep more of their forces occupied in Europe and in watching United States intentions or motives, whatever they may be. So there is one of the more significant changes in China. And as I say, I think that by the year 2000, it's highly likely that we will be on a very, very friendly, official basis, official I mean on a recognition basis, with the Republic of China. I think both, and not because there's any agreement between either side as to a feeling of admiration for the other's society. It's just an accommodation which both of us will probably feel is to mutual advantage. I can't really go on too far in looking ahead as a specialist in Asia, except that possibly it might be of interest to somebody about the so-called Taiwan question. Both the Republic of China, formerly headed by Chiang Kai-shek, now headed by his son, and the Peking regime agree that Taiwan is an integral part of China. They just can't decide who runs China. We all know who does, of course. But I think that the Taiwan issue, which has held up recognition of Red China, if that's what we're going to do, may have a very interesting conclusion before the year 2000, possibly well before. I have a feeling that Taiwan, where I lived for 6 years, will probably end up as a sort of a Hong Kong. I think the Red Chinese will agree to let them proceed with their very, very successful capitalistic system. It perhaps has the highest standard of living in Asia, if you measure the quality of living and not the per capita income. It's very successful. And possibly Red China, Peking, will say, well, we'll run your foreign affairs and your defenses. You go on being a capitalist. It would give Peking good foreign exchange, like Hong Kong and Macau does. And it would probably be to their advantage. I'm not going to speak much longer. I want to tell you, though, about one thing that I think is perhaps the biggest thing that's going to happen concerning the future of China and perhaps the future of the world in the media business. And this is the automatic translation experiments that are now going on. They're now able to take the Chinese language and put it through a computer and come out with a limited vocabulary in English. And they are now doing the same thing with Japanese, which the characters are related, vice versa. But the ability to do this, as it grows, as it becomes more proficient, it just has a limitless possibility. It's going to mean that we can understand them so much better, they can understand us so much better. It's not immediately around the corner. They're also using voice translations, taking English voice and translating it into Oriental ideographs. This is on a very limited scale. I think they've only programmed for, I don't know, 50 or 60 characters. But it's the wave of the future, I think. And I think if that really goes through, it's going to be a tremendous communications breakthrough between the two cultures, the West and the East. And now, I'm sort of reminded of the guy who came home one night, had a little bit too much to drink, and his wife was waiting up for him, and he gave her a real song and dance, at which time she just hauled off and hit him. And he fell down on the floor, and he looked up, and he says, "Well, I have now concluded my prepared remarks. The question period is now open."